You're listening to the Plain Label Podcast. Hello, welcome back to the Plain Label Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Zelag, and along with me is my good friend and co-host, Eric Destiny Williams.
That's a good one. I like that. Hello.
In this episode, we will continue our Plain Label Plexcast theme with the discussion of Sing Street and Hustlers. Before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that we are proud members of the Deliberate Noise Network. Search Deliberate Noise in your podcast app for more great shows from the network. And you can also listen to us on Spotify. Just search Plain Label Podcast. Okay. Drink roll call. What are you drinking, Destiny?
Well, since I had a suspicion that you were going to maybe call me a name from one of the Hustler characters.
You did. That's a bummer.
Yeah.
I should have called you Destiny's grandma.
That's right. And so I was figuring that I would go with one of my sort of old lady type drinks, you know. And
I'm
wishing for sunnier days and happier times, which always makes me think of the summer, which is happier times for me, right? And So I am having a gin and tonic. I know, and you don't like that, and my wife doesn't really care for it either, so that means I get the bottle all to myself.
Congrats for you. Yeah. Why don't you might as well lick one of those pine trees that you hang in your car. Like, well, that's what gin tastes like.
It depends on garbage. This is a New Amsterdam is the gin, and it is just a diet tonic water. So it's not like a Tanqueray to where it's really sort of woodsy, but it is. It does smell a bit of the woods.
Sure. Whatever you say to get yourself to drink that is fine.
All Excellent. Right. What sort of seltzer beer are you having, Mrs. Zelag?
First of all, rude. Second of all, I drank a lot of beer yesterday, so you I didn't did. Want to drink any more beer.
What were you doing yesterday? Did you drink beer when you talked to my wife yesterday?
I think I was doing none of your damn business yesterday. So it's really, I'm a lady of mystery.
That's true.
So there's that. So
you're the lady that people you have danger in your eyes or whatever from Sing Street.
Yes, the riddle of the Rachel. That's actually the original song in there. Yeah. So I was out of the water that I usually like to get, and so I got Lime LaCroix, which I used so much with vodka, it just tastes kind of like vodka to me anyway. So I just dumped some little Tito's in there. So
okay.
I'm having the huge.
The huge, I like it.
Yeah.
You just go to any sort of establishment and you're like, I'll have the huge.
I do a quick two claps. Excuse me. The huge.
Yeah. And they look at you and they're like, oh yeah, yeah, Rachel. Got it. Got it.
I'm kind of a big deal. Sausage King of Chicago.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't work for me that way. You know, I say the huge and they just kind of look at me and they're like, get out of here, old guy. What is it? Don't you have some home to be in? Some basement to be dwelling in?
It would be weird somewhere else.
Yeah, really.
I think it's also funny that we're pretending that we go to bars now.
Like, oh, yeah, well.
A bar in a year.
That's true. Well, I hadn't been to a bar in well beyond a year, but.
That's fair.
The bar hopper is my wife of the family, not me.
Well, you know, there is a role and she needs to fill that role for your family. Somebody Absolutely. Has to do it.
Yeah, so. Someone has to be the people person.
Right. We rock, paper, scissors for that a lot here because neither of us really want to do that.
Well, fair. That's what happens. That is what happens. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into our discussion. We're going to go with, I believe that this is Rachel's selection of these two. It is from 2016 and it is Sing Street.
Your mother and I really are under a lot of pressure at the moment.
We had a look at our accounts and...
We're taking you out of school.
We're not taking you out of school, we're transferring you.
You'll be new then. What's your name?
Connor Lawler.
Shut up! We have a black shoe policy here, Mr. Lawler.
They're brown, they're quite sensible.
They're not black.
Who knows what this new prison will do for you. This is your time.
You see, she's beautiful.
How come you're not in school?
I'm a model.
Cool.
Do you want to be in a video for my band?
See, if you're in a band, sing me a song.
Take on me.
We need to form a band.
What? Connor's putting a band together.
Oh, good Jesus.
You'd play every instrument known to mankind.
Probably.
Show him.
It's all about the girl, isn't it?
What's this?
Homework.
I have school in the morning.
This is school. Rock and roll is a risk. You risk being ridiculed.
Jesus, what are you all wearing?
Yeah, we're just working that out.
That's great fun.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Have you kissed her yet?
She's got a boyfriend. Pulled off in his car, music blaring.
What was he listening to?
Genesis.
No woman can truly love a man who listens to Phil Collins.
So the guy with the car.
It's complicated.
As long as you're happy.
You are truly on a hero's journey. Are you up to that?
I think she's just an amazing human being.
Think big, Connor.
End of term disco at the school hall.
I say we ask if we can play there.
It's our first gig. It's going to be amazing.
I'll try and come.
You have to come.
Not exactly the Beatles, is it?
I actually love this band.
Dublin, 1985. Love it already. 15-year-old Connor has just been moved to a new school. Between the inane rules, fascist teacher priests, that is a sweet band name,
yeah,
fascist teacher priests, and bullies, it is a daunting place. He meets a beautiful girl, Rafina, and is immediately smitten by her. To get to see her, he says he's in a band that needs a model for a music video. Would she be interested? She agrees. Only problem? He doesn't have a band. He hastily forms one and creativity starts to flow. That was good.
That was good. Yeah. Shocking when they're actually a good one.
Right. I mean, the bar is set so low.
That's true. Some of the time I'm like, you know what? This is my third attempt. Fuck it. I'm just leaving it in there. I don't know what this is exactly what it says. I'm just. So, like I said, I thought that maybe this was your pick of the two. What, say that you had to pick Sing Street and say that I'm being truthful and that it was your selection. What would have it have been to draw you to this film?
So pretend that you're not a dirty liar. Let me think. I think we like randomly watched this one night and I remember it being good.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Because yeah. You said, I believe it wasn't randomly. I think that the nomenclature that you used was you drunkenly watched this one night.
Those two usually go hand in hand.
Oh, okay. Let's not split hairs.
Good decisions, bad decisions. Yes, I remember like Brad was like, let's just watch this movie. And I'm like, okay, whatever. That was honestly how that went. So, mm-hmm. And they're, you know, they're in Ireland. So that's always fun for me to listen to the lilts.
That's right. That's like your homeland, even though it's not really...
It is not. Yeah. We did a ancestry and I am not from, I'm England, but not Ireland for sure. So.
Okay. Well, you were at the destination then for Connor.
Obviously. That,
yeah.
His name is Connor. I can't remember what she called him. Like,
right. Yeah. She had some funny name for him. Mm-hmm. So you had seen this before and then you rewatched this for the recording. So what is it that you like about it? Or what did you think that was a positive takeaway from it?
First of all, the music slaps, obviously.
See, there's our age thing again. I'm never going to ever use that expression because it'll just sound so incorrect coming from me.
Well, I'm sure mine sounded super cool.
Well, as cool as it gets, I'd say.
I was just like, I remember watching this and he goes up to this girl and he's like, oh man, I need to put a band together. Okay, that's fun. You know, we're like getting people in together. And then they're really good, which
right,
was,
yeah.
That was like the biggest surprise for me. I was like, oh, they're going to play these like cute little, like, I remember being like fifth grade band and we'd play like When the Saints Go Marching In and it was like all terrible. Like, that's what I was thinking. And then they're like, oh, we just like randomly put this song together and it's amazing. And I'm like, oh my God. So I think that was like my biggest takeaway, that was like just fun to watch. And like these high schoolers are more talented than I will ever be in my entire life.
Wait a minute. So one of the reasons why I figured that this was a selection of yours, especially after I started watching it, was like, oh, this is like Irish boy version of Rachel, is what it made me think of. Because for people that don't know, Rachel and her sisters enjoy a little bit of the sing every once in a while. The
sing, yes.
Yeah, to do the sings. And so I was like, oh, okay, because, you know, some of their productions weren't like real sophisticated.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, I can definitely see like Rachel and her sisters putting this together or doing something of the like.
Putting a sweet 80s band together. I would love to do that with my sister. I will actually text them when we're done and let them know that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. So. And you got your band name. It's already up here. It's Fascist Teacher Priests.
So good.
One of you gets to be the fascist, another is the teacher, and another is the priest.
Oh boy, I think I would choose teacher.
Well, I think that's what you would choose, sure.
That's fair. I usually don't get a choice.
The two sisters can battle it out on who's going to be the fascist.
Right. Well, as the middle one, I would get the last choice anyway, so it doesn't really matter. So.
Damn middle kids. Yeah. Mistreated.
We're just forgotten about. It's terrible.
Right. So that's what my initial impression was, oh yeah, Rachel loves musicals.
Yes, they really do.
And Rachel enjoys to do a little bit of the singing herself. And this is kind of like a pull yourself up kind of a, song creation kind of story.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I had not seen the film up until the recording of this.
Nice.
And I did know the director though. And I had seen Once.
Oh, this is the same director?
Yeah, same director as Once.
Oh my John, God, that makes so much sense.
Yeah, he's the writer-director, John Carney. He's known for this and Once, and then the film Begin Again, which I have not seen. And then he also did...
You haven't seen Begin Again?
No, I have not.
Oh my gosh, it's so good. I just listened to the soundtrack like yesterday.
With Keira Knightley, correct?
Yes.
Okay. No, I haven't seen that one.
This guy is amazing. He's awesome films.
Right. And so I was looking forward to it because it was John Carney, and I, you know, couldn't really tell what it was supposed to be by the poster.
Yeah.
And when we start, I was kind of like, okay, like I'm kind of with it. I appreciated the film that went straight for the throat with him asking the girl to be in his band and all that kind of stuff that you already mentioned. Yeah. It's like the movie doesn't screw around with all this, like, oh no, I'm nervous to talk to her and all that BS. He's like, no, yeah. I've got a story to tell. I don't have time to waste.
Right. Yes.
And so I like that the first couple times that he sings, I'm like, ooh, he's okay. And I was like, I don't know how this is going to go if he's not really good, because that was one of the sort of main draws for me with Once, was that they were actually really good.
Yes.
And they're actually singers, you know, which I didn't realize at the time.
Right.
And so then as this goes, I was like, oh my God, I'm fucking loving this movie.
Yes.
The highlight for me is the sort of fake performance in the gym where they're driving it's like Driving Our Own Way or something like that is the song.
Yes. Yeah.
And I loved that piece to where I was getting goosebumps and I was getting emotional watching the movie. And I'll say now, like, I got physically, how do I say it? I got worked up watching both of the movies. And the second movie I'd already seen before, which was surprising to me. And so I don't know if it's just like the environment that I'm in currently, or the amount of frustration that I feel with just sort of the daily, just the world.
Yeah,
but I saw these two films that had uplifting parts and I was like, oh my God, look, they're doing the thing. Like, they're doing it, you know? I just felt so good about them doing the thing.
Yes.
So I loved it. Like, I really did like this quite a bit. And I was sort of surprised by the end at how much I was taken by it. Because like good. I said, I was a little shaky at first, but I think that was just because I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. But once they start, I think it was the first time where I was like, oh, I'm in, is once they started as a group, when they started dressing in different costumes. Oh, when they
had their costume, the one was a cowboy. Yeah.
So they got the cowboy and he's like, talks about, saying something about how he looks like a gay village people person or something like that. And he's like, what's gay about the village people? Yeah. So like that, to us, like, it was just little lines like that where I was like, oh my goodness, how perfect is that for a like a 14, 15 year old in the 80s?
And at the end of that music video, the kid with the fangs, I actually snorted. Like, I was like, yes.
Yeah. Because he was so proud of that. And I liked also that since that was the first one, we've got the only African-American character in the movie. He's like sort of mugging for the screen. And it's kind of like, oh, if you ever shot a home movie with friends, you'd always have the one that was kind of like, I've got to be in every shot kind of a friend. Right.
Yeah.
And so I liked that little bit as well. What did you think of what I was calling for a while was not Seth Rogen as the brother Brendan? Because he had that sort of look to where it was like,
sure,
Seth Rogen like.
Sure. I thought he was an interesting character. Like, he is kind of you know, he's like helping his brother out with things, but he's also like really kind of sad about his own life. Yeah. And I wrote, like, one of my notes was the kids making each other feel better when they had the music up and they were all dancing when the parents were like screaming. It was like, really bittersweet because they're like so close and helpful for each other, but also like, yeah, having to turn the music up to drown out their parents fighting cannot be a fun thing.
Right. And I was glad that the fighting sort of didn't overwhelm the film. You know, it was just like an element of his home life to where it wasn't a it wasn't the main plot thread.
Yeah. And I liked when like the brother kind of unloaded on him a little bit and said, I could have been, you know, something more. But then at the end, spoilers, he's like not bitter about it to his brother. Like when his brother asked for help, he's like, absolutely. And so I really liked that.
Yeah, of course, because I put the, hey, there's Rachel's favorite deal, it's the I'm in guy.
I'm in. You know who I thought was the I'm in guy in this movie though, was Glasses Kid.
Because that's the depth of some of their characters, where I was like, oh, it's nerdy blonde or nerdy redhead, glasses.
Yeah.
Cowboy guy.
Cowboy guy. Punchy kid.
Yeah, right. Oh yeah, the redheaded bully.
Yeah. Glasses Kid was cool as hell though. He is like talking to his friends and the mom comes in, he's like, we will not get anything done, we need to continue this meeting elsewhere. And he's like just doing rabbit stuff at his house. Like, I thought he was pretty fun. So
yeah, and that's the sort of level of specificity that I think a lot of people don't put in their scripts, is the fact that he's got a pet and it's a rabbit, and they have a little short little montage of, you can't put the rabbits on the bed, they're gonna shit all over the bed. That kind of thing. To where it's just like an added little extra detail that makes the world feel more lived in.
Yeah. And I mean, Glasses Kid got a little bit more backstory. Like, his dad was a musician, which, I mean, they probably had to explain why he knew how to literally play any instrument in the world.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. The brother, who the Brendan character, who not only has all of the smart ass remarks to Littlefinger, which I was like, oh fuck, Littlefinger's in this? I was like, I don't know about this now. But he has all of the smarty little comments, and later when they say that they're gonna divorce, he's like, I'm not moving over there, you know. And right. It's just like,
he's like, finally, pack your shit.
Yeah. It's like, good, yeah, we got it, get out of here or whatever.
Right.
What I also liked about him was, so I put in here, I was like, Brendan is fucking Rachel's number one guy just from the beginning, just because he's the smart ass character.
He was very sassy.
And he's, you know, the brother that knows the best. And I was like, this is the sort of characters that Rachel likes.
I do. He also really was like into music videos, which I can appreciate in the time.
Yeah, he was into music videos, like the Rio music video where they're talking about how it's art and all of that. And they show some of the video and it's just a split screen. Like, it's not even anything.
And I was, one of my notes here was like, I love in old music videos when they like mouth the words along with the song, or they like are doing what they say they're singing.
Oh, right. Where they do that redundant sort of story trope where they're just.
Yes. Yeah. It's so cheesy. And like, you know, it was like right when music videos were coming out, like that was like a lot that happened a lot. And I just really thought that was funny.
It's
like a little throwback.
A little bit of trivia for, and I'm going to I know that you have not seen this movie. So Jack Rayner is the character that is the actor that plays Brendan. Okay. He is also known for being in the 2019 film Midsommar.
I've seen that movie.
You have?
Yes.
No way. Did you watch that on a bet or what?
No, we I don't know. We watched it one night. I don't know.
Mrs. Rachel Zelig, that is not your kind of movie.
It really wasn't.
I know you definitely well enough to know that that's not going to be something that you're going to enjoy.
I mean, I kind of like the ending, to be honest.
Oh, yeah, I like the ending, but it's like unbearable for about 2 hours of the two and a half hours.
Yeah, it really is.
But anyway, he plays Christian.
Right.
The guy that Florence Pugh is dating in that movie.
Yes.
He's a much different character in this.
Yeah, different endings to both of his characters, slightly different endings for those. So,
you know, I was the first time I watched that movie, I had to rewind it because I was like, wait a minute, am I missing something? Like, and this is spoilers for Midsommar, but I was like, how she's bad now? literally took me a minute to where I was like, oh, wait, she's happy about this. Oh, shit.
I wouldn't say she was bad. She just kind of changed her viewpoint. All villains think they're doing good things, right? It just depends on where your viewpoint comes from.
From the mouth of a writer right there. So yes, I really liked Brendan. I really liked that music video thing that you mentioned because that also made me laugh here. I thought that we already mentioned this mostly, but I liked the video prep and then the result where everyone was dressed in different kinds of things.
Yes.
You know, and I loved the sort of reality of, no, you have to put makeup on. And so she puts makeup on them, but it looks like a kid has put makeup on somebody. Right. It doesn't look like I'm just going to cut my own hair and then it's amazing. Right. It's not like that.
Yeah. She's like, I can do anything. I'm like, okay, well, you're 16.
Yeah. You've got some balls, girl.
Yeah. I liked that. He also kind of changes his look by the music videos that he's watching or the music that his brother gives him. Like when he goes through that like little emo phase is very cute.
Oh, absolutely. Well, when he's doing the Boy George stuff with the second video with her. Yeah. Where he talks about risks and disappointments and he again kind of goes for it in kissing her after she just jumps off into the water.
Yeah.
And then I like that, you know, she's like, oh, it's for art and all this. And I'm like, God damn, is this is like so 16-year-old talk.
Right.
Like, this is so spot on.
It's also like, we're not a pop band anymore. We're this band. And like, that is just like very like dialogue that would come out of their mouths as well.
Yeah, because then Glasses goes, we were a pop band.
Right. I don't really care. I just want to play music.
Yeah.
He
calls himself a futurist, which I thought was funny.
Yeah. And the guy's like, well, I hope to see you in the future, man. Love it.
Yeah. And we had the, another one of the pieces that I really liked is when we get those risks and those disappointments. And what I liked about that was, you know, she jumps in there, they have their moment and they kiss and it looks like, oh, they're going to be together now.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, what about your boyfriend? And she's like, you fucking ruined it.
Dumb. Right.
Like, way to go. Way to go, you stupid.
You stupid.
Yeah. She's like, now I'm thinking about my boyfriend and not you, you dumbass.
Right. I love when they were kissing and then she was like eating. And she's like, hold on. Like,
oh yeah, in the park in the later part.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, let's take this and make it as least romantic as possible because that's how real life works. Like,
well, and you know this, but we just watched Wet Hot American Summer yesterday for like the millionth time, it feels like, for me, but for my, like, it's like a half of a time for my wife since she wasn't really watching it. And so all of the gross Paul Rudd kissing in that movie, she would look up and she's like, what is this is gross, like what's going on? And I was like, it's supposed to be gross. And she's like, I don't get this movie at all. And then later,
you smell like burgers, I don't want to date you.
Elizabeth Banks,
I would want to date someone who smelled like burgers. That would be way fun.
Oh god, when Elizabeth Banks has all of that barbecue sauce all over her face. And she's like, yeah, I know I do.
It's so good. I'm anyway
oh it keep, is so good yeah.
Digress.
So anyway, so yeah, so So talking about the kissing parts is where that got me.
Yeah.
So yeah, the other bit that I thought was really good that I thought you would especially like, because you like the kind of like, oh fuck this kind of characters as well, is in the big test scene.
Yeah.
And they're kind of like, what the fuck? And they all don't get it. And then the bully just
takes a nap.
He's like, just wads up his deal and just flips off the guy and then just doesn't even care.
Yes. I thought that was pretty, I liked how like the bully was handled, right? Mm-hmm. Like he stands up to him. I really liked the main character a lot more than I thought I was going to. Sometimes the main character is very vanilla and everybody around them is colorful. And I mean, he was kind of vanilla, but he was brave without being brash, which doesn't happen a lot, I think. Like, yeah, especially.
That's a really fine thread, needle to thread sort of a thing.
Yeah. And I'm like, he's a frontman of a band, which takes like a lot of wanting people to look at you, but he's like also very quiet, but he's also like really ballsy. So it was a really interesting like set of characteristics for this kid. And like he kind of takes it on the chin when the fascist priest like dunks his
head in the sink. An upsetting scene to be sure.
Yeah, but like he, you know, how he handled that was interesting to me. And so like I don't know, I think he was just a lot more interesting than I thought he was going to be.
Yeah. And one of the things that I liked about him is he was an unknown to me. Like he was a person that I didn't have any sort of expectations
to put on. I don't know him from anything.
Yeah. So. And so I did recognize Jack Rayner. And then of course, Aidan Gillen, Littlefinger. And the other,
you could say he was in The Wire if it makes you feel better.
Yeah, really. He's always going to be Littlefinger to me.
I know. Always.
And the, it's kind of like Joffrey, like even if he was anything else, it'd be like, nope, that's who he is.
Poor guy. Like I'm sure he will never be anything else.
Yeah. Right. The person that I was familiar with, but kind of took me longer to figure out who she was, is Lucy Boynton. And she was the actress that played Rafina.
Yeah.
And so I knew her from the horror film, The Black Coat's Daughter.
Of course you did.
With Kiernan Shipka, with Sabrina. Yeah. And then she's also in Murder on the Orient Express.
And Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, which I still have yet to see, and I'm not in a hurry. My wife wants to see it, but I'm not. I don't know. I keep distracting her.
Why?
I don't want to see that movie.
You should just watch it. If I saw Midsommar, you could watch Bohemian Rhapsody.
I like how you tried to appease me with the pronunciation.
It's better than Rock of Ages if it makes you feel any better.
Oh, there we go. There's an old called back. Unbelievable. The only movie that I've ever seen with Rachel and Brad.
Did you know you tried to get me to watch that the other day? He's like, oh my gosh, it's on HBO or wherever. I'm like, we're not. Hun, stop.
Tell Brad that I've got that entire Scream collection for him. And then today I got the entire Paranormal Activity set.
Oh, I won't be watching those, but
he can watch all of that stuff instead of watching freaking Rock of Ages, for crying out loud. All right. One of the other things that I put in here is I didn't realize that you were in this movie, which I thought that would have been nice. You know, a little bit of a, you know, self-congratulatory sort of thing where
you already talked about the bully.
Well, I was going to say you were one of the dancers when they are teaching them how to dance like the 50s.
That's like the most awkward snapping I've ever seen in my entire life. That reminded me of Dairy Girls, like all of those girls right there.
Okay. Well, then I definitely need to start watching that then.
Oh, so good.
Because
I'm gonna rewatch it. It's the best.
That genuinely made me laugh really hard. Was the dancers in the school. Unbelievable. I put that it's so spot on with Rachel's dancing, though. It's gotta be her.
Probably. I mean, I'm gonna be so awkward the first time I like go out and talk to anyone. That's probably exactly what I'm gonna look like
when
it starts. So
you just pretend like you're on Zoom, it'll be fine.
So in the ending, exciting ending where they're going. I first of all have no geographic knowledge of how far a trip that would be because I don't know anything about that. But
me neither. I didn't like it though. I know that. I was like, oh, too much water. What's happening?
I actually said if this was an Eric Williams directed film, their boat would definitely would have capsized and they both would have died.
Wait a minute. So yeah. I put that I really loved the ending. I also
are you getting soft in your old age?
That's right. That's what I was feeling. I told you I felt the feelings in both of these movies. And so I'm like, man, maybe it's just the world's beating me down to where I'm like, all right, I'll buff some of these edges off, maybe.
Right. God, you should really watch Ted Lasso then. It will just make you love it.
Well, maybe. Isn't that on Apple? The yeah. Apple TV thing? We don't have that.
We have all of it.
So anyway,
over a year. What do you want from us?
one of the other things that I liked about that was right before they go off and take that trip, the brother says, you'll probably die, but you know, go on.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I support you?
I love that because it's like, you know, this is going to go horribly for you, but I'm here for you. I support you. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I love that it ended there. We don't get a glimpse of what happens because it might be wonderful. I mean, those songs were amazing. So maybe it was.
But like, yeah. The songs were really quite good. And that's one of the things where as soon as the movie was over, like while we were getting ready to record, because that's how much I do my homework right before it's due. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I, of course, looked on Spotify and had to find the soundtrack for this.
I totally did the same thing.
Yeah. To where I was like, ooh, I gotta be listening to some of those. The last time I did that was when we talked about, or it was when I watched Rock Anna and the Apocalypse.
Oh, sure.
Not sure. Rock of Ages. Man, Tom Cruise was giving it his all in that movie, though.
He tried. Anna and the Apocalypse was good too. That was like a random, like I had made a Christmas movie list and that was on like the top, you know, some list that I put on there. And so I was just watching it. We could talk about that one later.
Yeah, that is a good movie though. And it's very much that's another one where I watch it and I'm kind of like, you know what? Musicals aren't dead. Like they don't have much of a heartbeat, but there are still some films that use a lot of music in them. And
yeah, and when they do it well, it's awesome.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And so this one's really good, especially if you're a fan of any sort of European 80s rock.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, like, fucking watch this movie.
Yeah. It was good. They really captured like whoever wrote the songs did a great job. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, I believe that it said John Carney and another person, which I didn't write his name down, but those were the two that were responsible for the songs.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So anything else about Sing Street? I was quite happy with this one, really surprised, and it was one of those ones where I sort of had heard good things about it, but it's kind of like, well, I don't know, we'll see how it goes, you know.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where we were too, and then like Brad was just like whatever, because Brad just watches anything and sometimes it's really good, sometimes it's not good, but we don't need to talk about that. So
yeah, well, he has an eclectic taste.
Case in point.
That's right. All right, well, let's move on to our second film. It is from just a couple years later. It is the much different 2019 film Hustlers.
Front hook, ankle hook, knee hook, come here, you can do the carousel. To switch and wrap.
Minus 40% is 160.
Woo! I just want to take care of my grandma, maybe go shopping every once in a while.
When I was a kid, I always wanted to work with animals. I was close.
These Wall Street guys. You see what they did to this country? They stole from everybody. Hardworking people lost everything. And not one of these douchebags went to jail.
The game is rigged, and it does not reward people who play by the rules.
But it's like robbing a bank, except you get the keys. Are you in?
I gotta. These
are my coworkers.
Jobs, please.
What if somebody calls the cops?
And says what?
Woo! I spent $5,000 at a strip club, send help.
Ah, damn.
We're a family now.
Ah, damn.
A family with money.
Ah, damn.
And when would you say that things got out of control?
Test the mirror. Ooh, ooh.
Please help. This is my husband.
So the guy went back three more times.
Guess he must have liked it.
I was born to flex. Diamonds on my neck. I like boarding jets. I like morning sex. But nothing in this world that I like more than jets.
We didn't do anything wrong. You know, Tony wouldn't let this happen. I'm gonna text him.
Who gave her phone back? Jump it down, back it up.
Inspired by the viral New York Magazine article, Hustlers follows a crew of savvy former strip club employees who band together to turn the tables on their Wall Street clients.
All right, so our second film, like you had just read the IMDb plot synopsis, is Hustlers. I think this is my selection. Yes. This is a movie that I had already seen, and so this is one where it was on the Plex cast list. And it was one that I selected because I was like, oh yeah, I've seen this before. This is maybe something that is worth a rewatch. So I had already seen it. What did you think of it watching it this time?
Yeah. So I kind of, interestingly enough, had the same reaction to this as you did with Sing Street, where I had like heard a bunch of kind of bustle about it and heard that it was like probably good, but I was like, I don't know. I don't really want to watch it. So it was kind of funny that we thought the same thing about each other's movies.
Yeah. Do you think that had anything to do with the fact that it was set in a strip club?
Do
I really need to hear this story of like a hooker with a heart of gold type of a story?
Maybe. I mean, I've never seen like Magic Mike. I've never.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if it's just like, it's just, I thought maybe it would be like romantic comedy sort of, and like, I didn't want to, you know, those are not my favorite. And so I like actively avoided watching it, but I like hadn't seen it for sure. Yeah.
I will say that the most uncomfortable I've ever been in my life was being at a cabaret and not knowing what the fuck it was. Oh. And I got there and was like, what is this? Like, whoa, what's going on? Why is this person taking their clothes off? And I was like, and they're like, no, it's a cabaret. And it's like, what the fuck is a cabaret? And this was years ago, but I was like, oh my God, this is so uncomfortable. This person's getting close to me. Like, ew, go away. You know, it's well, like invading my bubble and everything. Like,
the only strip clubs that I've been to, like, you're not allowed to touch anybody. Oh,
right. Yes. Yeah. And you're, so you're definitely window shopping, so to speak.
Right. I guess I can't remember if the one in Vegas that we went to, the dude one, but anyway, like I guess that like I was just I had never been to a strip club like this strip club in this movie. I thought that was, yeah.
So once you finally got the mandate that you had to watch it, because I'm such a strict person when it comes to that sort of thing, what did you make of it when you finally got to it?
Well, I'm gonna be honest, I did look to see how much like a faux fur coat would be if I ended up buying it.
Like, chinchilla, God. Or
I was like, God damn, J-Lo looks good as hell in that fur coat with basically a bathing suit. And
okay,
sunglasses.
So let's talk about J-Lo in general. This woman is however many years old, right?
Yeah, she's like 50.
She's in her 50s, and she looks unbelievable in this movie.
Yeah,
and this is a thing where my wife loves J-Lo. Like, she's been to a concert of hers.
Oh boy.
And she's like, you know, we watch World of Dance that J-Lo is a executive producer on and is one of the panelists.
Okay.
About dancing. And so she like for real loves J-Lo. And so we watched this movie and I watched the movie and was like, Jesus Christ, like, good for her being like a 50-year-old woman. And it's just like, yeah, I'm going to be doing this dance that she does towards the beginning of the film. And then it's just like a boss bitch the whole show.
And I'm sure that she like was doing all that herself, right? Like,
yeah, she did do all that herself. Yeah. And that was so some of the things that were interesting about this movie was so this is written and directed by and I'm gonna butcher her name, but it's Lorraine Scafaria, I believe is how you say it.
Okay.
And she is a I knew her from the film Coherence, which is the sci-fi film.
Okay.
But she has had six different director credits, this being her most recent. And there was an article recently about how since this movie came out and it was a big deal, and there was this a lot of talk about how it was one of the snubs that didn't get an Oscar nomination, even though it did get a Golden Globe nomination for J-Lo. And that there was sort of a lot of talk about how J-Lo is going to get a Best Supporting Actress nod, at least.
Really?
Yeah. And so that was the talk of the time. And then it got ignored. And then she doesn't have any films that are in development. And Constance Wu, who had Crazy Rich Asians and this film come out very close together, doesn't really have very many things that are coming out after this. Okay. And it's just kind of like as much as people would like to think that Hollywood is this sort of progressive kumbaya land, to where it sure as shit is not, because it's a female writer director, a female star of two very successful films, and you know, J-Lo being sort of at the most sort of like awards performance that J-Lo has given, sort of a level, and you know, all of that is kind of being shot down, is what it seems like from the outside. And I think that's frustrating, because you see a lot of these movies and it's like prestige movies by these people that are there because they've been directors for years and years and years. Right, and it doesn't seem like it's about quality anymore. It seems like it's about who that person is or what sort of system your that name. They're in. Yeah. And I was like, that's bullshit, because like of this, you know, when this came out 2019, of all of the different films that were eligible for something, I was like, you got to give them something like costume design or like production design or like something, because the movie looks amazing.
Yeah, I would all of the say costuming costume design and production, like that, I would agree with those for sure. Yeah.
And so it was nominated for 72 different things with all of the different awards that they have out there. And like I said, it did get a Golden Globe nomination for Jennifer Lopez for Best Supporting Actress, and a Screen Actors Guild Award nomination for Jennifer Lopez as well. And one of the things that I thought was interesting about that was listening to Lorraine Scafaria, where she's talking about how they filmed all of these different sets and scenes, to where anytime it was any sort of nudity, J-Lo on the actual dance floor, anything with Lizzo or Cardi B or whatever, there was only women around. Kind of like what we talked about when we talked about The Handmaiden.
Yeah.
And so it was just like and when there had to be guys around, it was guys that were all vetted. It was like, oh no, I know him. He's a good guy. Like, he's not some fucking creep.
Right.
Whatever. And so I was like, God, how hard is it? Like, you can't just have this be the norm. Like, why is it this is the sort of outlier, to where it's this female driven film written and directed by a woman, based on an article by a woman about how they're like, you know what, fuck these Wall Street guys. And I don't know. It just seems like it's such an odd film in that respect, or a unique film in that respect. And it's like, it's just bullshit. It's basically, I mean, like,
it's just this small thing called the patriarchy. It's like, not a big deal, but.
And so I watch it at points, and it just like, is enraging to me, and I'm like a straight white guy,
right?
You know, to where I can't, you know, it's like you get a glimpse of other people's I don't want to say burden, but like other people's like less than ideal situations, I guess.
Yeah.
And when that actually hits you, you're like, this is fucking bullshit,
right?
You know, because I think that especially Frank Whaley, who he's in the TV show of Daredevil, but he's also Brad that gets shot in Pulp Fiction with with Samuel L. Jackson.
Look at the big brain on Brad.
Yeah, I see that all he's the time. That guy. And so he's the guy that at the beginning is it's when Destiny and Ramona are first working together. And then he's the first CEO that's like blowing bubbles and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I see that and I'm like, God, this fucking gross guy is like, fuck you, his fucking CEO. You know, and I'm just like pissed watching this movie. I just watched it and I'm, because I think that it's so well done that I get engrossed into their story.
Yeah, right? Like the architect guy that's like, are we gonna have sex or what? So I thought, like, obviously this is based on a true story. So there were like, there was a framework that was sitting underneath the film, but I thought this was going to be like a little bit more like Promising Young Woman, where like that was like they like started to do it to make money and then like just like ended up doing it to fuck these guys, basically, which I was totally down for, of course. It's like, yes. This don't drug people anyway. Sorry.
By the way,
just a disclaimer, like, sorry, don't do that. I was kind of confused about like who the villain was really supposed to be. Like, was it Wall Street people or was it like Ramona? Because like, you know, when she's being interviewed that something happens, right? Something bad happens. They're not where they were anymore. And so like anytime you're seeing like a flashback scene, you're like, oh, you know, I mean, and you can tell it's going to follow the, we're doing something gets out of hand, blah, blah, blah. But I was just like, I got done watching it and I'm like, was it about getting over on these guys or was it about like female friendship or was it about something else? So to me, it was actually a little bit, I mean, it was visually great, obviously, but like it was a little bit more broken than I thought it was going to be.
Like you felt like the storytelling was muddy.
Right. Or like the theme of like what was going on. And I totally, again, like it's based on a true story. So it might have just been like, this is how it happened. But I don't know. Like she's like, Ramona was in it for the money. She didn't want to make friends. And like their friendship was like a really important piece of the story. But then like they're not friends. And like, I don't know. It was just kind of confusing about which story they wanted to tell, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. I like that, that bit because I think that I felt a lot of that when Anel and I watched this the first time, because I was like, you know, I didn't know anything about the movie going into it.
Right.
And I just assumed it was going to be these girls screwing people over at this club the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and they get into the stuff where they, they introduce Janine from The Handmaid's Tale. And I'm like, no, not Janine, not the redhead. Like, not, she's going to fuck everything up. You can just tell by her energy.
Right.
The one that's all coked out.
Yeah.
And so once they get into the coke stuff, what it made me think of a little bit was how you enjoy that beginning piece because it's mentor mentee. And you've got the sort of interludes with Julia Stiles, who I think that Julia Stiles is perfectly cast against these two because it's such a J-Lo and Constance Wu are so made up and so specific in their types. And then you have just like white bread Julia Stiles. Businesswoman Julia Stiles. Right.
I mean, I feel like she was even, you know, with other things I've seen her, she was even like, her speech was even affected by how she was like delivering lines too. Like, very, very like straight vanilla.
Almost completely removed or unemotional. So you get that fun first half and then it takes that turn and you're like, wait a minute. No. I was having so much fun watching them fuck these guys over. Like, wait, what are you doing now? What are you doing? And that makes me think of something like Fight Club, to where I watch that first half of that movie and I'm like, oh yeah, it's just this Fight Club. Awesome. And then they start doing the Project Mayhem stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I don't like, this is not what I wanted. This movie should not
be called Fight Club because it doesn't make sense. It's only half the movie.
That's right. And so that was sort of the vibe that I get from this. The first time I watched it, when I watched it again for this and I sort of knew what it was.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. Now I'm with it. Now I got it. And I liked it a lot more the second time I watched it, and affected me a lot more the second time because I was focused more in on the Constance Wu and Jennifer Lopez story and their relationship and just the kind of just the kind of like mother, daughter, sister, older sister, younger sister sort of dynamic, which was, I mean, obviously there the first time I saw it, but watching it again, you just see how any sort of woman in Destiny's life sort of lets her down. And
yeah,
Ramona lets her down at one point, and then she brings her back, right? Because after she has her kid and she sort of like gets back into this new game and all this kind of stuff, and they're all together again, but then it's just really sort of up and down. And then of course we get the grandmother that passes away, that everything sort of starts piling on top of her. And I think what really sort of set the movie for me in terms of that being the main thread to follow is that Julia Stiles, when she keeps getting phone calls from Destiny, and she's like, well, did Ramona, like, what did she say about me?
Yeah.
And it's just the way that she says that, to where she's just either looks up to her so much, or in like platonic love with her or whatever, to where she just admires her and wants to be enough for Ramona so badly, to where I watched that and I'm like, God damn, this character, like this is a broken woman, you know, to where she's just struggling. Correct me
if I'm wrong, but like when she was going through like having a kid, like she was the one who decided not to call Ramona.
Exactly. Yeah. They just talk. She's yeah. Cause Ramona's like, why didn't you call me? You know? And she's asking about,
which makes me feel like she, cause like you could see from like the body language in that montage that Ramona like did not approve of her boyfriend, which is understandable.
Yeah.
But like, did she not call Ramona because she didn't want her to like be disappointed in her?
Mm-hmm. I think so. I would think so, because she is with a person that Ramona doesn't approve of. And then she gets pregnant with this douchebag. And then, you know, she doesn't want to disappoint her. And she just sort of cuts ties with her.
Yeah. Or just like, yeah, it's like easier to not say anything than to like mm-hmm. own it and lay it all out there.
Right. And, you know, Ramona's doing the thing where it's like, well, we would have helped you. You could stay with us. Like, why didn't you call us? You know, right. And all of that sort of stuff.
It would have seemed like a good solution, but it's just really interesting.
Yeah. And so we have that stuff. And I think that the part that really got me was two different things. It's when you get, I think it's like the first time where the group of them come out and they're going to sort of take advantage of these guys as a group.
Yeah.
And it's like the Give Me More song is playing, and they have that montage that goes on through that, to where that's where I got not like emotional, to where I was sad, but like proud of them. It's like, yeah, fucking get them kind of a response, you know?
And again, we don't condone poisoning people.
That's right. And so I was all excited about that. And I put in here twice. I was like, fuck, J-Lo is amazing in this. Just because it's one of those where she seems real showy and real J-Lo. But I felt like the second time watching it, I was like, she's doing more than I gave her credit as doing. Because I knew of the dance where she's nearly naked. And I kind of figured like that was what she was going to be doing in the movie or something, and that was going to be kind of it.
Yeah.
But then when I see her just sort of you know, making her own mistakes and disappointing people, and she has the one drugged out girl that she keeps trying to go back to.
Right. I think that's like the most, not confusing, but that's the most interesting part for me, is that like Constance Wu is like looking up to her, but she is doing the dumbest, she's making the worst decisions.
Yeah.
Like taking that one credit card and like charging a bunch of, like, and that's where it got, I think it was that point where it got detached for me. It was like, is that what this is about now? Is like, Rona just wants all this money and she just keeps charging things and she was just in it for the money. And that's where I was like, what, where is this going? I think.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Well, and I think that that's consistent throughout, because toward the end, even when you see the sort of final conversation that Julia Stiles actually had with Ramona, and she's showing pictures, and it's like a picture of Destiny and it's a picture of her when she was younger, And yeah. She sort of keeps those things together. But then she's also still talking about how, you know, everything is a game. It's basically just, you know, who knows how to play it. And so it's like, it's almost like she is also really conflicted in that she wants to just be chill with Destiny, but she can't allow herself to do it. You know, it's almost like they have, something on each other. And so even if they say they're not going to squeal on each other, they can't ever really trust anybody. And so they always have that guard up, no matter how much they might not want to.
Well, and she, I mean, like, she probably wasn't in it to like make friends.
Sure. Yeah.
But like, again, like that it gets messy, because if you're going to say she wasn't in it to make friends and you guys make friends, then like, to me, as part of the story, the friendship should have been the thing that got in the way, and not you bringing random people in and like making the group bigger.
Well, they bring random people in, and then they bring that Janine, which I'll never, it's kind of like the Littlefinger thing, to where I'll never not think of her as the girl with one eye in The Handmaid's Tale.
Right.
And so she comes in, and that's when Ramona's trying to make Destiny jealous, where she's just like, oh, you're so beautiful, and she's like hanging all over her.
Okay and so like kinda, it is kind of their friendship then.
Yeah, so it's just like a power dynamic between them, to where it's like, no, you do need me, I'll just move on, I'll just go on to this other girl, you know, that kind of stuff. To where, and I think that Constance Wu is just amazing in this. Like, I know that she gets more attention for Crazy Rich Asians because it's also a more flattering look for her, because she's got those really high bangs that are not great in this look. But I think that it's the moment that really, really works for me with her is when she is doing what Rachel would appreciate, which is she's handwriting something.
Yeah.
And she gets the stooge that's like, oh, your handwriting should be a font. And she's like, oh, really? She's like, what's that? And it's just like the charm that she throws on right there. I was like, oh God, like, okay, I get it. Like, I understand. Like, this poor dude has no chance at this moment. Right.
And then the next scene, she has a computer.
Yeah. And so that's a nice little thing, to where then they just do like a fist bump or something like that, to where they're like, good girl. Or she kisses her on the head. That's what she does.
Yeah. And I liked the scene where J-Lo's like laying out the tears of Wall Street dudes and how to deal with them. So I thought that was interesting, because you're basically, I mean, it kind of ties back to what she says in the end, right? Like, everybody, it's a game for everybody. It's just like how well you play it. And so like how you handle them is like how you get the best money.
Right. Right. Cause she says, they go straight from the crime scene to the club. Is one of the lines that she wrote. And I'm like, God, fucking guys are gross. Right? I feel like I've said that to you several times. Like, God, dudes are the worst. One of the other things that I wrote in my notes was, I feel like they just said, hey, Cardi B, just be in this building at this time. No, forget about those cameras. No, they don't mean anything. And they just like fed her lines, because it just seems like she was like unnaturally... it felt like she was unnaturally good in this. Like, she was so almost unself-aware of what was happening.
Where I was like, what the fuck? Just really owns anything that she does and doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they might have given her lines and she was like, I'm going to say whatever I want. So thank you.
Could be.
I mean, that might be more of a plausible scenario.
Right.
I liked that they were in this. It took it away a little bit for me too, like having like the cameos.
Oh, to see people that you recognized.
Yeah, because I mean, obviously I recognized the lead people, but like it almost just seemed like it would be fun to have these people in here. And it's like when there was a cameo on Game of Thrones, it kind of just like took it out for me, you know what I'm saying?
Sure. Yeah. That makes sense. So what about when Usher came in?
Yeah, like why?
Mm.
It could have just been like they could have just made up a famous person. It's probably a preference for me too, but like when sometimes in books when that happens, they like name drop just to name drop, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It wouldn't ruin the movie for me or anything, but it just like took me out of it, like a little dissonance.
Yeah. So I think that they're probably trying to get the audience to go, oh, I know that person. Oh, cool. As opposed to someone that's maybe more well-versed in stories and worlds, to where they're trying, like, I imagine you're trying to just fully immerse yourself, and then you see someone that you recognize and you're like, whoa, nope, that's a real person. What is that person doing in here?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. It was just like, I was ready to like be in it. And it, I mean, again, like I said, it didn't like, I wasn't like, oh my gosh, what a terrible thing. I was just like, oh, that's weird.
Yeah. One of, I didn't write this down, but I'm looking at the page, and one of my favorite little bits is the addition of Lily Reinhart's character as Annabelle. She's the
throwy up one.
She's the one that's throwing up from Riverdale. Yeah.
Oh, I've never seen Riverdale.
But I haven't either.
I think that was a very fun tick for her to have.
Absolutely. And I love that she just kept doing that and then was like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And when she got arrested, she did it.
Right. And so that again was another little bit that's never really in a lot of scripts, to where it's that extra little layer that they have.
Yes.
The same thing with Mercedes, and she has her fiance that's in jail, and then she's like, well, maybe I'll say something else and I'll stay there for another month or two months or 3 months. And she's just kind of enjoying sort of playing with him. And I liked that her character was she was like a breath of fresh air. Like, she was having fun and she was just like a really kind of like a positive spirit. And everyone else was like really worried about stuff until towards the end, where she's like, I'm out, and just basically runs away when the guy jumps off the roof.
Yeah, I mean, that got too real. Yeah. I get it.
Well, and again, I love that bit there from Constance Wu, to where she's screaming and yelling and then just kind of puts her hand over her face and gets in the car and leaves.
Yeah, I didn't understand why she did end up taking her kid to school. Like, I would have just let that lady do it.
Oh, man. So that was uncomfortable. That was the moment where I was watching that, and she's got her little, like, very late 2000s, sort of like a chain that she's got around in her jeans.
Yeah, and the hip jeans that I hope never come back into style.
Yeah, the hip jeans, and she's got the little crop top, and she's walking bloody, and she's walking her kindergarten, first grade student in pajamas into school.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh no, like, what are you thinking?
But I was just confused because that lady like offered to take her, and why wouldn't you just let her do that?
I don't know. It's probably just she's trying to live up to being a good mom or something.
Or she was just in shock from what she had to do.
Yeah, that could be too. That could be too. One of the notes I have in here is Julia Stiles gives such great face.
Yeah.
Whenever Constance Wu is telling her something and she kind of gets the high eyebrows, like, oh, I'm not judging you kind of.
Yeah. 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 But mm-hmm. I am judging you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. So this was a film that I obviously really, really liked a lot. It did use music just a little different than Sing Street did. But what I liked about it was that it was a lot of it. So I liked the fact that we had a film that was its own sort of original creation of songs that were inspired by an era. And this is like, this was 2008, 9, 10, or 7, 8, and 9, I guess, basically, that this was set in. And so it was playing all of those songs. They talk in the trivia to where it's got, they asked Usher if he wanted to be in it, and he said yes. So he brought his own chain, shades, and jackets from 2007/8 for the scene.
Oh, funny.
Yeah, like he was like, oh, I'm all the way in, right? And they had Constance Wu was a... like to learn how to do this. She was actually working as a stripper. And so
oh,
they talk
really?
About, yeah. So they talk about the money that she made in that, in the trivia. They did all of the Cardi B, Usher, Lizzo stuff all on the same day.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And so it's just like a real sort of kind of like look at how a film that's not a real big budget was able to sort of make it happen and make it like actually work. And the budget that there is there is mostly because of who the stars are, because it's a $20 million budget, but I think a lot of that went to J-Lo.
Probably.
But then it ends up making, and this is what makes me mad about the people that don't get a job after this movie comes out, is, you know, it costs $20 million to make. The gross worldwide is $157 million. So it made a ton of money, you know, seven times more than. And then yet the writer director can't get another job. And it's the same sort of thing with To All the Boys I Loved Before, to where our favorite little Laura Jean,
yeah, right,
to where she's not really getting cast in very many things, to where meanwhile the boyfriend has been attached to like four or five different big name projects. I've seen
him pop up in a lot of different,
Yeah, and you're like, that's completely ridiculous. Like, just because she's an Asian girl, she doesn't get any jobs. And, you know, Constance Wu is doing some work, but it's not like she's headlining something.
Right.
It's like, it's, I don't know, it's nonsense. Don't like it.
Agreed.
I don't like it. So anything else about this film that we haven't mentioned?
The only other note I have is that I also have dreams where I'm in the backseat and no one's driving the car. And I thought that was very weird.
Do you really?
Yes.
Wow. That's got to be a control thing, though.
Doesn't it? Yeah, it really is. Yeah. I'm sure that's what it is.
You're a control freak, Mrs. Zelak?
I like things just so.
I feel like that's OCD more than it is control, right?
I think that's mean to say it. No.
That's interesting, though. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't happen like all the time, but like when she said that, I'm like, I thought I was the only one that had those dreams. Well, they're terrifying, by the way. You have to like scramble over the front seat to like get to the steering wheel, and the car is like driving. So
I can imagine that wasn't the most fun thing to watch then.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this is what my dream looks like. How fun for me. Yeah. This is great.
Unbelievable. So the only other thing that I had here at the end was the, you know, it's, I wanted to just reiterate that the moment where she, where Constance Wu is talking to Julia Stiles, and she says that line where she says, you know, what did Ramona say about me? And it's just the way that she said it, to where it's just that heartbroken, like, I want this person to pay attention to me and to talk about me and to be in my life, but I don't want to admit that.
Yeah, and I mean, it reminded me of like middle school when you absolutely. Really want a girl to be your friend.
Yeah, and she does, and the choice is just this slow push on her face, like while she's crying, and I'm like, God damn it, like that's good stuff.
Yes.
I was really taken by the sort of filmmaking of it the second time around.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, if J-Lo was sitting out in a car and she asked me to come in under her fur coat, I would be there. So let's just throw that in there.
Yeah, really. Well, what if she bought you a chinchilla fur?
I have mixed feelings about wearing actual fur, but if it was like fake, that'd be fine. So
yeah, it'd be tough to be like, you know what? No thanks.
Right.
I'm
also
good.
Like, I mean, that's another thing that I like didn't love is like the wanting to buy so many things. Like, I don't understand that either. And so that was
That's not your love language, is what it is.
Right. Like, yeah. I'm not putting super expensive high heels on my Christmas list every year. So
well, that's just a mistake in your personal life, is what
right.
You're making.
You're right. Yeah. I was doing like this is totally off topic, but I was doing this like workout the other day, and she's like, you had to get up on your tiptoes, and she's like, pretend they're your weekend shoes. And I'm like, so flat feet, because I'm wearing like tennis shoes.
Said pretend it's your weekend outfit, and you're like, oh god, I gotta take my pants off now, like all right, I guess.
That's exactly
shorts it is.
Yep.
All right. I think that's pretty much it for those two films. I was glad that we had these paired together, because like I said, and if people haven't already clued in, I enjoyed both of them quite a bit.
Yeah, I really do think I'm going to do a rewatch of Hustlers. Like, now that we've talked about it, I want to like rewatch it, knowing kind of what we've discussed. So
yeah, it's good. I would maybe give it like a couple of months or so, and just kind of watch it for. It is one of those kind of like what we talked about with Wet Hot American Summer, to where you sort of have to know what you're getting, to where it's not like, oh, it's all strip club based. It's just more about
American Summer is an instant classic.
Well, I mean, that's my opinion too, but it's more about the female power and their relationship than it is that strip club.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, like I'll give it a little bit and then I'll give it a rewatch. Yeah. So that'll be good. Fun.
Plus you get to see J-Lo just fucking owning a stage again. So there's nothing wrong with that.
I really would want to get into pole dancing, but I'm not sure our ceiling can handle it. So it would probably just end up in me like cracking my head and going to the emergency room. So,
well, it would give Brad something to do. Like, hey, build this for me.
So. I really thought you meant that he was going to do pole dancing. So that was a fun visual for a hot second.
Well, I would never assume such a thing.
I'm coming down the basement and he's like, not now.
Yeah, I've got turn? It's like, I got a campaign going. Get out of here.
Oh, man.
Oh, Brad, that's fun. All right. Well, why don't you wrap us up there, Mrs. Eli? Because I don't believe I have anything else to say about these films either.
Fine. Okay. If you have any comments for the show or movies you think that we should talk about, please feel free to email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow the show over at Twitter under the handle @plainlabelpod. And we have an Instagram account that you can follow by searching for Plain Label Podcast. If you want to help us out a little bit, you can check out our show notes where you'll find the link to our Amazon wish list and you can buy us something that we want. I will put 6 faux fur coats on there for you to get just for me.
And a pole.
And a poll and somebody to install it so I don't kill myself. Thanks for listening and join us next week as we discuss the films The Killing of a Sacred Deer and The Favorite.
Yeah, you gotta say The Favorite, right?
Favorite.
You gotta say that British.
British.
Don't you know it's British?
Hello, go.
I was kind of hoping you were gonna do an intro with like an Irish.
I really thought of